This is a download from the Post Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
This talk was given by Professor Malcolm Sawyer of the University of Leeds on developing post-Keynesian ecological macroeconomic analyses.
Thanks very much. The first slide could be that I'm going to could be identical to the one that Yanis put up, so I'm going to skip over that and just take what Yanis said as given and indicate the way we're approaching it, which has certain overlaps with what Yanis and some perhaps differences along the way, but I don't think the thrust of it is all that different. And in a sense, I suppose one of the issues that comes up is on the one side, how do we model, as it were, the environmental constraints, and how do we allow for those? And the way we've gone about it here, or intend to go about it here, is slightly different. And I think we could discuss whether they are complementary ways or how one could fill them out. Another part is that this is a very much a starting from a, if you like, a demand-driven model. So one of the questions we also have to raise is, since that demand-driven is coming from the drive for investment, how does that demand for investment and the drive from that side adjust to the ecological impacts and constraints, and how does that feedback, if at all, or what sort of policies could be put in there? So we look at it in terms really of three, I won't call them resources or inputs, but three aspects of which go into output. I should say that I use the term output, but there's no connotation that output is a good thing or related to GDP or wealth or anything like that. It's just output, as it were, having an impact. So as usual, it uses up physical or employs physical capital. We also have the labour resource, which we'll call augmented labour resource, including things like productivity. And then there's the use or the impact of use of environmental resources, which here we're going to express in terms of the ecological footprint being, as it were, imposed by output and its growth. And then see how that might feed back upon other or the possibilities for production and growth. Just to mention, these are effectively fixed factor proportion production functions, so no substitutability through price. There will be, over time, substitution, as it were, changes in the various ratios, but that comes about through, on the one side, the direction of research and development, maybe changes in the composition of output, and to some degree, changes in social conventions and norms and so forth. Okay, so that just expresses the relationship between capacity output and the capital stock, where V is the capital output ratio, and I'm glad for Joe's paper because we wanted to assume or to take that the capital output ratio is a la cauda, or broadly speaking, constant, so I can draw upon that rather than the Piketty's findings. And then also there's a relationship between a fixed factor proportion relationship between output and employment, but particularly then the what we call the augmented labour resource, which depends upon productivity, hours worked, annual hours worked, participation rate, and the working age population. And although it may not come in centrally to what we're going to do later on, I think introducing the population is also an important ingredient in terms of the overall growth of the labour force to start with, and then the effects which that has upon output and the ecological footprint. And so it does have, I mean, as an aside, is where it's going to raise issues about population policies and so forth. Now, the way which we take the effect upon the environment is, at the moment, is to write it as, or to talk in terms of the ecological footprint. This, we will argue, will grow over time, or will grow, or expand with output and also with cumulative output, and that the relationship between output and the ecological footprint can potentially be affected by the direction of research and development. Now, I've taken the optimistic assumption that research and development will reduce the ecological footprint for any given level of output. That may be being too technologically optimistic, but although it's in here as negative, as it were, I don't rule out that it could be that effect might be, as it were, oh, at least in terms of the partial derivative, positive. I think one of the issues, which I think was in a way a little bit touched upon in some of the questions for Yanis, is how do we model, as it were, this environmental effect, because it doesn't form, as it were, an immediate constraint. Clearly, the availability of the labour force, the availability of the capital stock could potentially form an immediate constraint upon what output is produced, where the environmental damage and so on doesn't form, as it were, an immediate constraint, as we are doing now, grow much faster than the ecological footprint could be sustainable. So the idea we have is that there's an ecological footprint, as it were, growing there, and then we'll come back to talk about what sort of feedback effects that might have upon production and upon the possibilities for production. So we go through then, the next stage is to go through the idea of, as we're identifying three growth paths, only one of which, most one of which will be achieved. There's no suggestion that these growth paths will be mutually consistent in any way. Indeed, some old standing debates about the compatibility of a demand-led growth regime with a supply growth regime. So we identify, as it were, three growth paths, three growth rates. One which comes from demand, which is essentially based upon investment. One which comes from the growth of the augmented labour resource. And the third, which is the growth of the ecological footprint. And then have the idea that there is some sustainable growth of the ecological footprint. We may also want to incorporate, of course, there's an absolute sustainable level. It's not just the growth of the ecological footprint, which is we have to look at it in terms of sustainability, but the overall level, and that sustainable rate may be negative as well. So we don't want to rule any of those out. Now, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip through to some extent the investment equation, except to say it is broadly Kolletskian in spirit. There's one or two adjustments which be made to that, in particular that investment is scaled by capacity output and not by the capital stock in this equation. And part of the reason for doing that is a kind of almost like a technical one, which is later on we want to allow for the idea that the capital output ratio is indeed affected negatively by the ecological footprint. And but scanning it in this way helps me to bring that in. I want to also introduce research and development into that equation as a component of investment. So we distinguish between desired investment or demand for investment and then what might be termed effective investment, which is that financed and funded, and there we distinguish between, as it were, external finance and internal finance, and assume that retained profits go into funding investment, and then there's a certain amount of borrowing, and only a proportion of what the firms want, as it were, is actually financed. Some of that would be financing in the sense of through loans, and so creating bank deposits. Some will be just the recycling of workers' savings, in effect. And so that gamma there can be an element of credit rationing. Now, one element which we now need to do in this is also to disaggregate this investment function, let us say, into something like green investment and brown investment, or whatever the opposite of green investment is, and distinguish between that, because that would enable us also to begin to model the idea that funding can be either pushed towards green investment or pulled away from it, and that policies in terms of requirements, well, use of the Green Investment Bank, or placing requirements on banks that they lend to a certain proportion of green investment and so forth could be incorporated into that. But that's an element to be done. Differential savings out of wages and profits. That gives us then capacity utilisation and the growth of the capital stock. This is a one period growth of capital stock. It's not, there's no implication. This is the underlying trend coming in there. The growth of the augmented labour force, just by identity. The only the two twists we're going to take here, one is that we would allow that the growth of productivity would depend via some form of Cowdall Verdun laws on the growth of outputs of productivity would depend upon output. And later on, things like the growth of the population, GF, would allow that there's some almost like Malthusian mechanisms at work, that the as the ecological footprint goes up, crops get climate change takes place, less crops grow, but people die, and so there's an effect upon the growth of the population. But it also should be said later on, would also make the point that the particularly the growth of hours worked, growth of participation rate, and perhaps the growth of the population are all going to be governed by norms and social conventions. So that the possibility, one of the possibilities of adjusting to a lower growth rate comes through changing norms and conventions over that, rather than cutting real wages so people don't work as much or whatever it might be. The ecological footprint comes out in that equation again. Just as two asides and perhaps obvious ones here, which is to come out of the would hopefully come out of the model, which we won't get around to simulating it, is the need to modify these equations for the budget position, because I take the broad view that if there's lower growth, will be on the whole lower investment would have to be offset by a higher budget deficit to maintain a particular level of capacity utilisation. And secondly, going back up the earlier presentation, the Cambridge equation, or a modified Cambridge equation, would also hold here. So lower growth would involve a lower rate of profit, unless it was offset, of course, by budget deficits in the usual kind of Kurtzkian tradition. Okay, I'll try to express this in terms of three growth rates. This is just a 45-degree line, and this is the growth of these average growth of the capital stock, which translates into a growth of output G1. This is the growth of the labour resource, which we take to be a function of the growth of output. And if we have scaled it properly, again, where this cuts the 45-degree line, we'll give the growth of the augmented labour force. And then we have the idea of the growth rate of the ecological footprint here. And we've marked this in as being, this is the sustainable rate which we take, and then that corresponds to a particular growth of output. Now we're on the whole going to be assuming that G1 and G2 are greater than G3. G1 and G2, well, usual arguments as to whether there's a pressure upwards or downwards on the unemployment rate, whether the growth of output is going to be faster than that which would maintain a constant employment level. There's nothing in what follows, I think, which crucially depends upon this order that is here. And one of the things which we've got to do, we'll have to confront, because when we come to any kind of simulations, is what is effectively here G2 and G1 adjust to one another to avoid either unemployment going to zero or to one. Okay, I want to talk now about two further aspects which we want to explore. So this, in a way, is up to where we've got at the moment. Much of it's going to come out in the paper shortly in ecological economics. There's a model put there which we've slightly modified here, but the thrust of it is there. And now to think in terms of how to now go forward in terms, firstly, of modelling the future, or not modelling the future, but modelling this, and looking at kind of feedback effects, and really want to look through two sorts of routes. One is this one in terms of what is the effect of the ecological footprint on production or production possibilities. I mean, what does it mean to say that as the ecological footprint grows and environmental resources are used up, is it kind of, why does that matter? Does it make, or at least in this level, does it make some sense production more difficult? And we're going to model that in a relatively simple way, which is to just have the idea that the ecological footprint would make production in some sense more difficult, so that more the capital output ratio in effect rises. Now this might reflect the idea that as the climate deteriorates and various things crumble into the sea and so on, you know, that we've got to use up resources making that good, but more generally the idea that in some sense production becomes more difficult as the ecological footprint rises. Now, as an aside here, I think we also have to start to some extent break this down, the ecological footprint, and possibly look in terms of the specific effects in terms of energy and the use of, and the exhaustion of, or possible exhaustion of certain forms of energy, and the more general issue to do with the sort of ecological footprint in terms of destruction of species, or the destruction of rainforests and so forth, and those sort of effects. So that's again something to be done. Then the idea that there are possibly Malthusian, what I call Malthusian effects, food failure and effects upon population growth. And then one particularly want to particularly kind of stress in this sort of context is what would be the role of, on the one side, is where what we might call animal spirits, that is, the firm perceptions of the future and what effect that has upon investment. Could it possibly be the case that entrepreneurs become so scared of what is happening to the environment that they stop investing? Or, you know, those sort of, sorry, that's putting it rather flippantly, but just to what extent does perceptions about the future and the future growth, would that, how would that feed back on terms of investment? And also the role of, you know, social conventions in terms of on the one side, labour market participation, but also what sort of investments are regarded as socially acceptable, a whole range of effects of that. Now, quite how we're going to model that, or other than to say, well, social conventions change, now our work may go down or go up, whichever it might be. Okay, so those are the ideas of the ways in which we might incorporate the kind of feedback mechanisms. And the other one, which I'm going to... So let me just say that's the next task, is to actually try to put some numbers on this and start simulating the model. And now whether I do that in my lifetime, I'm not sure. getting the coefficients and so on, I shall be knocking on Yanis's door, I think, to get some of the coefficients maybe. Okay. The other one is to indicate what are the, in some sense, the overall policy implications of this. Well, it seems to me, now one sense, because we've, you feel, well, to some extent we've almost built in the policy agenda into the assumptions that we have made. However, I think it does give us a sort of kind of a long list of different policies which would need to be followed. Now, because the one which is in some sense ruled out here is really the use of relative prices and the and so forth. But the four that we would particularly, I think, highlight is the relationship between investment and finance, and what are the mechanisms by which one could ensure that finance flows in the sort of green investment direction. What sort of institutional arrangements, what sort of policies in terms of would be required there? And what I think we should be looking at are things like a Green Community Reinvestment Act, you know, in the US, where the some requirements that banks make, I think, certain investments or certain funding of local investment moving in sort of the direction of making requirements on banks that a certain proportion are green or ethical, whatever phrase we wanted to use. Secondly is how, I don't exactly manipulate animal spirits, but how do can the prospects of future lower growth feed through into investment decisions, and that will help to bring about, as it were, the lower growth. Thirdly, I've mentioned the role of social norms and conventions, and the fourth, which is the, I suppose in some sense one saying, that there are certain sorts of market mechanisms which, if we're not careful, would come into play, and those seem to me to be the Malthusian-type effects which could well come into play, that growth will tend to slow down, population will tend to slow down, just because things are getting harder to do and more difficult, and that is the adjustment process is not obviously a very particularly welcome one. So to summarise, one is trying to this idea of developing a demand-led analysis which takes into account in a serious way the ecological concerns, and the other is to try to, from that, in the end, draw out a broad policy agenda by trying to highlight. Now, the optimistic way of coming out of this would be that when our model gets working and we can start tweaking some of the parameters, we can see which are the most effective policies and which are not. But that has been somewhat optimistic. But at least that might enable us to play out some of the possible effects which would come out. We also no doubt have to address the issue of how do we model the future, which is fundamentally uncertain, but I'll leave that for another time.